Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. You are with me, Dr. Michelle, on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4 is our telephone number. And you can email me live at breadboxmedia.com. We were talking about depression yesterday. And, you know, there's lots and lots to talk about. We're talking about diet and depression. That's really important stuff. I want to continue that today. I want to go into a little bit more about some of the foods that are better for the brain, different ways that you can look at things. We're going to talk a little bit about paleo diet, Mediterranean diet, what those entail, the goods and the bads. When it comes to Mediterranean diet, there's not a lot bad you can say about it because it's not a, quote, diet. It is just food. And that's what we need to think about, just food. We need to think about food. That's the important thing. We're meant to eat. We're meant to dine. We're meant to enjoy the beauty of God's earth. We are meant to look at the colors, the pomegranate, the eggplant. It's just everything, the greens, the yellows, the oranges. I mean, really, can you just not think of anything more gorgeous? And even when we see, now those of you that might be a strict vegan or vegetarian may not feel this way, but, and you may not feel like this about all things, because when we look at the actual being that we're eating, we don't get so happy about that. Most of us, especially those of us who were not brought up on farms, who just go to the store and see a package of meat and we think about how good that's going to taste. So we don't really worry about or bother ourselves with what it really means in life to the whole process. This was a living being. It was conceived. It was born. And it is sacrificed for us to have nourishment. At the same time, we see a picture of, you know, look at the food groups and you see a picture of a fillet, a salmon fillet, and you see a picture of a raw steak. And doesn't just, it actually can look kind of good for those of you who are omnivores, and well, we all are omnivores, but who practice being the carnivore part, of our omnivoreness. So even though that's not a word. So I do want to talk to you about it, but I also have some other things I want to get into. May have to go into some of those next week as well. But there are several studies that came out in the Psychiatric Congress of 2016 that I think that it's really important to go into, that such as women with severe depressive symptoms are less likely to conceive. So we know that. Now, we also find that there are many studies now coming out that are refuting what was originally accepted for probably the better part of the last 30 years, 20 to 30 years, is that certain antidepressants do not affect the developing child. Well, we're finding that isn't the case either, so that there are some SSRIs, which are serotonin reuptake inhibitors, that those particular drugs that are very common, they're the ones with the least side effects, Prozac and Zoloft and Celexa, so many of them, that they actually may cause some problems. But we'll talk about that as well. And you can always email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can also text 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, and see if there's one of these you'd like to even address today. We also have a little study about chronic sleep deprivation, which is tied to more depression in young women. And it can be caused by anything from being a college student to being a young mother. So we want to kind of address that as well. Now, sleep apnea and insomnia, the same thing. The Journal of Sleep Medicine has many times, many is even too small of a word, studied, talked about trying to find links to sleep deprivation, and depression or other mood disorders. And we know for positive sleep deprivation that there's a strong relationship to worsening of mood, to depression, to anxiety. That's all there. So we need to really pay attention. And you would be surprised of things that cause you not to sleep well, such as one tiny, you know, that pin, the pin size, pinhole, pin tip size light from your cord that goes from your laptop to your, or your iPad or even your phone, but usually on the laptop. That goes, that's just on your cord. It's barely a pin. It's a little green light or a little, usually green if it's charging, or it could be yellow or red. That is enough to disturb your sleep. So is your, the old, most of us don't have them anymore, but if you have an electric alarm clock and with the illuminated numbers, those too. How about your smoke alarms? Absolutely. Your body knows they're there. And those of you who fall asleep with your phone by your side, and even if the sound's off and it lights up, it's enough for your body to go, oh, I think it's dawn. Oh, maybe it's not dawn. Well, maybe it is dawn. Or as many of you do, you fall asleep with your laptop on. You fall asleep streaming a movie or Facebooking somebody, and you fall asleep, even if it was all for good intentions, you fall asleep, your laptop is on the bedside table or right there, you know, on your bed, and you fall asleep and you wake up and you think, oh, that, you know, oh, gee, I left it on. But your body is telling you, it's not night, it's not night, it's not night, because you will see blind people react in their pineal gland, react to light. We just know that. So these are very important things too. We've talked about seasonal affective disorder in the past. You can get the previous podcast by going on by your app, which would be great, or getting on breadboxmedia.podbean.com. So where will we start today? So why don't we continue a little bit about the food, and then we will get on from there. Let's see. I am not a good multitasker, that's for sure. And I was trying to get something across to Alex, who's there today. All right. So, and Alex is awesome. So, hi, Alex. I'm really glad you're here today. And I'm, as always, doing a million things at one time. So let's talk about diet. Let's talk about nutrients. Yesterday, I also, I also want to talk a bit about we hear so much about the gut, right? The gut-brain connection. The gut is the third immune system, nervous system. The gut is so important. The gut is important. And we wipe out our gut. We do. We still function. But one antibiotic wipes out your flora. Now, will it be recolonized? Yes. But will it be, it's like a secondary forest of a growth, secondary growth of a forest, if any of you know what that is. When the original primal forest is wiped out through a meteor or wiped out through fire or wiped out through an odd change or a freak freeze, and the original plants die out, there are very few primal forests left. There actually one I know of, I think there's three, but one I know for sure is in Kentucky, oddly, where evidently it's a primal forest. It's the first forest. It's not, it hasn't been wiped out and then replanted over thousands of years. At least that's my understanding. So what happens is that then something else will grow. So many of the forests we see today are actually secondary growth forests. They may have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, but they're not what was originally there. So yes, we will replant our flora the soon as we swallow, the soon as we breathe, the soon as we take in one bite of any food, we will, because there are billions. There's something like, what did I read today? 360 trillion bacteria in different kinds of bacteria in our colons. That's a lot of them. That's an awful lot. So we're going to dive into this a little bit more on the other side of the break. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. See you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. We're going to have a short program today. We lost all connection and we lost internet connection over across the country. And so we'll try to get as much as we can today. It's Friday. We've got the weekend to ponder these things, and then we're going to dive back into them on Monday. This is a very huge and broad subject, depression is. But diet and depression is really important. And while we're at it, so is sleep, and so are the medications you take. So it all pretty much revolves around the bodily functions and the gut too, the bodily functions and your mood and depression. And when we talk depression, I'm talking depression, but I'm also talking name your poison, name your mood disorder, name the thing that bothers you. So it can, instead of depression, you may say, well, I'm not really depressed. I'm more anxious all the time. Well, guess what? Anxiety and depression are sisters and brothers. They hold hand in hand down. They're like Siamese twins. They're connected to each other. When you depress, for whatever reason, you start, your alarm systems start going off. Ooh, I don't like this. Ooh, maybe something's wrong with it. And then pretty soon you're that free-floating anxiety like we talked about last week. Focus. Are you going to be able to focus when you're so mentally foggy or you're feeling so down and so sad and so defeated and so hopeless? No, you're not going to be able to focus. That's one of the signs. Mental fogginess, inability to focus, inability to really think or really state your words very well. You get down to just a few syllables and, you know, you just, everything slows down. As I mentioned before, I will say it again. There are a myriad of physical ailments, easy, quick ones, and more long-term debilitating ones that present as mood changes or have within them mood changes. So please give that honor. You may have had to go in for some quick emergency procedure, and a few days later, you're feeling depressed or down. It could be a combination. Maybe you're not taking the medication anymore, but maybe it chemotherapy does this. Of course, we all know that, or we should know that. It can. It doesn't mean it will. Steroid injection in the knee, you know, or the shoulder. They say, we're taught, well, they're not going to have many side effects from them because it doesn't go into the bloodstream. It stays in the capsule. Well, yeah, kind of, but not really. And I have seen people, elderly gentlemen who have their knees swollen, they go into the orthopedic person who gives them an injection in the knee, and within a few hours, they are raging bulls or they're picking spiders off the wall because, yes, it did. Whatever leaked into the system, into the blood system, was enough to cause them to have huge problems. Now, that might be rare, but if you're the one feeling it, it's not rare to you. You're the one going through it. So just because someone way smaller than you or more frail than you seems to be able to tolerate an enormous amount of stuff, maybe you can't. So you have to give honor to who you are. So we are talking a lot about these diets and how diet in itself will and does influence your brain, but also how you have to have these vital nutrients, these critical, what they're calling in the studies, critical nutrients for brain health. As I said yesterday, wouldn't it be lovely if we were back in the garden and we were able to just pick off the fruit and eat from the land and do whatever we needed to do to get our animal protein? But we wouldn't have to worry about these critical nutrients because they were provided for us. But we have either hybrided them out. I think Mendel was the monk who was one of the fathers of genetics, because he was somehow hybriding some kind of pea or plant or something. So it's not that these are bad things. They help us get better. But what happens is there's always the good and the bad, the yin and the yang, the other side, the shadow side, the happy side, however you want to put it. The real rattlesnake, the fake rattlesnake, there's always the other side. And they say that too. Even Teresa of Avila talked about that. And St. John of the Cross talked about that. And many others that I've heard people quote, only I don't know them enough myself to be able to say, yes, this came from this person. But the concept that even with voices of God, voices inspiration, divine inspirations, that we can hear something that sounds very similar on the other side. It all sounds good to me. And it turns out one path is the correct path. One path leads to lots of troubles. So we have to know that here we are in 2016 and we have our food and we can even go get organic food, but that's not necessarily guaranteeing that we're getting our critical nutrients. Before we left yesterday, I was reading to you, and I'm going to recap that. I was reading to you about the percentages of those of us in the United States, of all of us, not those people from a different socioeconomic level, not people in different subgroups, not people from different ethnicities, just the people in this here United States. And 86% of us, according to the USDA, so nobody's selling it. Well, they could be bought off, but nobody's selling a drug there. Nobody's got a dog in the hunt. Nobody's trying to get you to buy their organic supplements. This is the USDA saying, and this was 2009. Remember what I told you? It's always lagging up. So if this is what it was in 2009 when they studied it, in 2016, you better believe you can. Those numbers are on the rise. 86% of us deficient in vitamin E, 75% deficient in folate, 73% deficient in calcium, 68% deficient in magnesium, 42% deficient in zinc, 35% deficient in vitamin B6, 34% of us deficient in iron, and 30% of us deficient in B12. Now, some of those, especially, well, in all of them, they have to play in harmony because they are very important in order to make each other go. That's, you have to have one in order for the other to be utilized. However, we'll take something like vitamin B12. Vitamin B12 is essential, not just essential. If you have a deficit, it will lead to permanent damage. Permanent damage. Also, it is very, we get that only, not only, but we get it mainly from meat. That's the easiest assimilated, and we must have a thing called intrinsic factor in our stomach to get it. What can mess with that? Antacids can mess with all kinds of stuff. So digestion's very important. I read yesterday about kale and broccoli. Kale and broccoli and Brussels sprouts. They are essential for brain health and immune health and all that. However, as the nutritionist was saying on their video, but guess what? You better chew it, and you better chew it well, because the one particular nutrient that these particular vegetables have that you can't find other places only is activated in the mouth. How's that? So if you take it, you do one, two chews, and you swallow it with a big lump of water, big gulp of water, you're not going to get those. There is a wasabi. You all may have heard wasabi. Wasabi is a hot type of it's green. You have it like with sushi, or you have it in Japanese restaurants. Nowadays, it really is just a little green with a bunch of horseradish. But the real wasabi is only grown in certain parts in Japan. Now that a few people are growing them in I think Oregon, they need running water. But in the days of old, before all these studies, way old, samurais way back, it was the way they had to grind this wasabi root in such a fashion with the right tools. It couldn't be iron. It had to be something else. And that would release the medicinal properties of wasabi. Other than that, it's just a hot root. So we have to understand that some things need to be cooked a little to release things. Other things need to sit for a while to release things for us. Other things need to be chewed and chewed and chewed and chewed. Other things need to be, you know, down to a good form, a different form. Some things are available in one form and not available in the other, even though they look the same. So remember that. Now, when I read you those percentages, I want you to realize those are just what they're reporting, and those are just the few they're looking at. Did they look at vitamin C? Did they look at vitamin D isn't even in here, and there's a lot of deficiency in vitamin D. So these are just a few parameters. So they're just giving you a tip off of the reality. This is not an exhaustive list. This is just for some of the things that they happen to look at, because these were considered key brain functioning nutrients. These are key nutrients to functioning of the brain. Vitamin E, folate, calcium, magnesium, zinc, vitamin B6, iron, vitamin B12, and there are others. Those are all important. And as I said, fats are super important for the brain. So we're going to dive into this a little bit more on the other side of the break. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. See you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today walking together on this road of life on Dr. Michelle Live. You can call me or text 573-4BREAD-4, please. You can get the app at iTunes. Also, you can email me anytime, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, and maybe over the weekend you have questions, because I wanted to get into, but we lost at least about 1.5 segments today due to an outage, so we won't get into those things today, but we will take them up Monday. Women with severe depressive symptoms are less likely to conceive. They found in a study, as reported on the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, that 30%, there's a 38% lower chance of becoming pregnant in severely depressed women than there is with little or no depression. Then also you don't know why is that. So I haven't read the exact parameters that they're, do they look at all parameters? Like maybe you just, there's so many other things. You have no affectionate relationships, no intimate relationships, etc. Who knows? But all I know is that that's part of it. Also, the fact that chronic sleep deprivation is tied to more depression for young women, whether it's young mothers or college students. And even though all of you may say and feel and experience that if you have one short night of sleep, it's like, oh, hey, you actually sometimes feel better. But chronically over time, it leads to greater depression overall. So that was a study out of the University of Michigan Medical School also. So that's an important thing. And also talking to the SSRI link exposure to lower birth weights and different gestational patterns. So these are things that we all have to keep in mind. You talk over with your doctors, et cetera. I always say, I think I was cut off with our power outage, reiterating again, as I always do, don't just run off a medication. This is all informational. This is all to have you think bigger, to look, to check things out for yourself and to bring things up to your own doctors, but also to start looking at yourself, questioning yourself just a little bit. And really, especially when it comes to diet, because a lot of this stuff can be curative, a lot of it can be preventive. So if you're not necessarily feeling that way, or your children are, let's say you're just kind of accepting that they have some ADHD or they have different things, you can look at this and say, these deficits that we have of critical nutrients, these are critical for the brain, very important. So I'm going to recap yesterday, since this is our last segment and we did get a power outage. So I want to recap, because I think it's so important, the fact that the omega-3 fatty acids, magnesium, calcium, fiber, they're finding fiber. We think fiber is just to help people have bowel movements. No, fiber does something. Maybe it is in the way that it you know, kind of cleans out the, I don't know, it binds, it also binds. We know that it binds with some medications. We know that it binds with some minerals in good or bad forms. That's why you shouldn't take certain minerals while you're taking fiber at the same time. But the reality is that the fiber can really help retool, reset your whole system. And they're finding now that aging and dementia, I had that article out for you as well, aging and dementia are drastically reduced in the elderly population who have a consistently fairly high fiber diet. So all this is important. B1, B9, B12, vitamin D, vitamin E, these are all critical, important nutrients. That just included. That doesn't mean those are the end all be all of them. So when we talk about the absolute most critical, though, the ones that will cause damage or will really, really cause your brain to not function the way it is and can actually boost your brain function, because you can, because what they will also do, also, not only, it includes neuronal membrane stabilization and anti-inflammatory effects. So your brain, actually, remember I told you that the neurons, the cells of the brain are covered in the wiring of your nervous system has a membrane that needs to be able to conduct properly. It needs to be well-oiled and well-tooled and well-hydrated, and it has to be non-inflamed, because inflamed is like if you were to take a match to your iPhone cord or something as it's charging, and you just kind of, you know, you disrupt the signals, you disrupt the flow. So you don't want to do that. So we do need those fats, and we do need cholesterol. We need all the things that are in our earth. We just need to know that they're good sources. We need to know we have the proper vitamins, and that we need to understand that with antibiotics, chlorine in our water, and different even imbalances because of supplements, we've changed the flora in our intestines, in our gut, in our colons, so much so that although we are walking around and functioning, we are not optimal because we are not getting that machine running on exactly what it's supposed to be running on, because our flora has been wiped out in our gut, and we have to, and it replenishes, but it doesn't always, as I was talking about in the first segment, it's like the secondary growth of the forest. It doesn't always come back the way it needs to, but we can change that because it's not stagnant. You know, it doesn't grow roots and that's it. It's not stagnant. They're always growing. There's trillions of them, but they can be wiped out in a second. So, you know, you can reestablish things. All right. So let's talk about some of the risks of the vegan and vegetarian diet before we go today. Especially with the vegan diet. Now, vegan diet usually doesn't contain anything that comes from an animal, even eggs. So we have to remember that. They kind of stay away from those things, a true vegan diet. A lacto-ovo-vegetarian is one who takes milk and eggs, but doesn't, and cheeses and things, but doesn't take any kind of flesh. And then we have our regular omnivore diet. We only have a few more minutes left. So one of the risks with a vegan diet and And for the vegetarian diet, as we said yesterday, was lack of vitamin B12. And that's really important because they found that 52% of vegan populations, 52% were demonstrably deficient. They didn't just think they were deficient, they could see it on labs. And 23% of vegetarians had insufficient levels. So that is a really important thing to know. 60% of vegan mothers, 60% of their offspring had developmental delay, 37 had some cerebral atrophy. So I think it's important to know that. Now, this is one physician who's reporting to the Psychiatric Congress with the research that he has done. So, you know, we need to kind of look at this as one piece of the puzzle. So he was also talking about the idea of feeding the microbiome, as they call it now, which is the gut flora. That's a really important thing. And the way that to do that is to eating more grass-fed beefs, eating more sustainable fish and non-mercury fish, getting those vegetables, getting them growing close, getting them to where you are replenishing. Sometimes things like yogurts and things like that will help too, but not the sweetened yogurts. All right, so there's a huge interest. We're going to close today just so that you know that there is a growing interest in food as therapy. Now, we are now, admittedly, the cart is way somewhere, you know, off in some field somewhere. It's not even before the horse anymore. This should just be an automatic. We shouldn't even think about food as therapy. We should be eating, and that should cause us to be okay, or at least cause us to be as healthy as we can be. And then the other things are medical things that have to be attended to. But we can also, I think it's good news, though, because we can start, if we get this mainstream enough, we're not just saying, okay, yeah, you're down, here's a pill, because it's not going to change the biology that needs to be changed, that food can help with. So this is the fourth consecutive year in the Psychiatric Congress, which is a very black and white, very mainstream psychiatric meeting every single year, that there has been educational classes and bigger and bigger audiences looking at food as therapy. So it is really important for you to know, if your psychiatrist and psychologist don't yet know it, that it's more than just paying lip service, like I say with spirituality. Well, now the psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers, they all know that your spiritual beliefs are important in your mental health. But, you know, that's kind of, it's a general kind of cloak umbrella. So we need to really understand that you need to be choosing more good plant-based foods without the pesticides, as, and hopefully not GMO, because we don't understand enough about that now. We also need to make sure that we get more nutrient-dense foods, like I talked about yesterday. You can get the podcast. Things like mustard greens, spinach, bell peppers, other plant foods that contain these phytonutrients. So there's also the carotenoids and the lycopenes, which are found in orange anything, all right? So orange, sweet potatoes, carrots, tomatoes, you know, they're kind of orangey red. All these things have lycopene and carotenoids in them. They're signaling molecules, and they help in protecting the brain. So I'm going to leave you with this for the weekend. Go out and get a bunch of colorful stuff. Whatever you, just get your eye. Watermelon, persimmons, sweet potatoes, greens, any kind of greens, all those things, and start incorporating them into your diet. Take a look at where they come from. Maybe look at some good grass-fed meat or some wild-caught salmon, and we will see you Monday. God bless you. This is Dr. Michelle. Please email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com, and we will see you next week, and we'll continue this conversation.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.